This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Wow, wow, wow. Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio, here in beautiful New York City, or it may not be beautiful New York City today. It's been raining cats and dogs all day. A lot of rain. But we are here for the next 4 hours on CBS Sports Radio from our 345 Hudson Street studios. Pleasure to be here with you today on a very busy Thursday. We got a whole lot to do as we take you up until 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. As we welcome you in across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM Channel 206, and also the radio.com application. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227 is the number that you could always jump on in, and it could always interact with us via the good old cesspool of Twitter. At Zach Gelb, at CBS Sports Radio is where you could find us. Connor Green along the other way. And as always, we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. If you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. We have a very busy show for you today. Coming up in 40 minutes, we'll be joined from sportsinformationtraders.com, as he does each and every Thursday in football season, John Price. He'll try to give you some winners for this upcoming weekend in the National Football League, so you don't want to miss his picks. Then at 7:20 p.m. Eastern, 4:20 p.m. Pacific, Mike Edwards from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is going to stop by. We'll talk to him about the Bucs. Then at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, the reason I open up the show saying wow, 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 and I'll give you a little behind-the-scenes radio talk for you on the Zach Gelb Show. There are some times, because of our time slot, or in any time slot, where when you're hearing an interview, it isn't live. We have an interview most of the times. 99.9% of the interviews we do are live. But sometimes you get such a big name and you have a decision to make. And that decision is, do you be a lazy radio host and tell the guests, no, we're going to blow you off. You can't come on during the hours of 6 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 7 p.m. Pacific. We are only going to do those times. If you don't want to take those times, goodbye. Or you could have a little ambition, have a little drive, have a little respect for your job and the audience, you guys, and you could come in a little bit early. Well, I came in a little bit extra early today, and I even got made fun of it by the big bosses here at CBS Sports Radio and Entercom. Usually we talk to you about Mark Chernoff, and usually we talk to you about David Mayernick. Chris Oliveiro, who is the market manager for the New York cluster down the hall, WFAN. They've had a very big day today with the triumphant return of one Craig Carden. And congrats to all of our friends down the hall at WFAN on the new lineup. And Craig has been through a lot. I've known Craig for a while. Craig was actually my father's intern over 30, 35 years ago. And Craig has a gambling addiction. Craig has problems. Craig has been to prison before, but ultimately the Craig Carden that I know is a very good dude who's been extremely benevolent to a young broadcaster like myself. And Craig and I had a nice conversation today, and it's great to see Craig addressing the problems that he has and getting help. And obviously he's been through a lot, and he'll be the first one to tell you it was self-inflicted. But it's good after a 3-year absence where a lot has gone on to see Craig Carden back, not only in the WFAN family, but the Entercom family. And we are a part of that here at CBS Sports Radio. So the big boss for that cluster, Chris Oliveira was in here and he was making fun of me and basically said, oh, you're in here so early. You know, 10 years when you're still doing this later, you'll probably be showing up at 5:55 p.m. Eastern for a 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern show. And I told Chris the reason why I got in a little bit extra early today. Sure, I'd be lying to the audience if I didn't want to see what was happening here in our 345 Hudson Street studios, but I had an interview with Dana White. And we have major breaking news from the UFC to start the show. Usually, we wouldn't start the show talking UFC. You know, and I've told Dana this before, that the UFC, I personally enjoy it, but I'm just not a huge UFC fan. You know, I casually watch it. I watch it when there's a big fight, but I'm not going to lie to my audience and tell you I know everything there is to know about Dana White and the UFC. And I've had moments where I like Dana. I've had moments where I've disliked Dana. But with that being said, I've now had him on the show. This will be the second time we've had him on the show. The first time we had a very fun conversation. I walked away saying, I like Dana White. And I would think because, I don't know what the right word is here, but me not being an expert at UFC, you know, I do my homework. I ask him the right questions, but I also have fun with him. Like last time when he was on with us, I was joking with him that I was upset that he was trying to get Tom Brady to the Raiders, and he claims to be a big Patriot fan. And trust me, I've gone on a rant before about that and torched Dana White for doing that. And I was very upset that he was trying to get Brady to leave the Pats. And then we'll joke around as well about food and some other things. So I'm talking to Dana, and the reason why I wanted to bring Dana White on this week, and we've been efforting all week and finally said we could do Thursday and tape it before our show, is because what I saw on Saturday, and I know we touched on this on Monday, but what I saw on Saturday was really one of the best sporting moments, not only of the year, that you will ever see. So Khabib was going for 29-0, was making his return, his first fight back since the death of his father. And at the weigh-in, and I didn't even see the weigh-in, but a buddy of mine, my friend Jordan, showed it to me right before I was getting ready to watch the fights with him when I was in Philadelphia this past weekend. Khabib at the weigh-in looked horrible. And there was still this thought that Khabib was going to win, but people started to think, is Gaethje going to win this fight? So I didn't know what to expect, but I was intrigued for this Saturday in the UFC, this past Saturday, just because it's a human interest story. You know, everyone has suffered great losses in their lives. Luckily, I'm still able to have my mother and father around, and I have 3 out of my 4 grandparents that are still alive. But we've all gone through losses in life, and they're never easy. And I've lost, unfortunately, 2 friends to mental health and also drug addiction. My grandfather, I've talked about this numerous times on the show, he got the last 8 to 10 years of his life robbed from dementia. And I've also had friends, one friend who lost his mother when we were in college, and another friend who lost his father when I was in college as well. And my friend Parker's father, Mike, he was my basketball coach growing up. And I have a really good friend that lost his brother at a very young age. So we all go through losses. And yes, there's a mourning period. Yes, there's a grieving period. Yes, there is a period where you are just basically feeling down and out. Like, it's over. I don't know how I'm going to live. Everyone has gone through that when you lose a loved one. And eventually, and you will still always think about that loved one each and every day. Like, I think about my grandfather and my Papa Eddie each and every day. And eventually, you got to pick yourself back up. You got to power through, even though it will never be easy. But you have to, in my opinion, continue to live your life and live your life to the best of your ability to honor the people that you've lost. So I really wanted to see that fight on Saturday. Not that I'm the biggest UFC fan in the world, because I wanted to see how Khabib was going to respond in his return. And after the first round, even with all the questions going into the fight, you knew this fight was over. And the reason why you knew this fight was over, Gaethje's corner even said to him, slow down. They said it to him when he was in the corner, slow down. And right there, you knew Khabib was going to walk away with these, and then the next round choked out Justin Gaethje. So I wanted to bring Dana White on to talk about that moment. I wanted to have him on to discuss that moment because not only did Khabib win the fight, and if you want to make another sports analogy to it, you had similar emotion to when Michael Jordan won a championship following the death of his father. And we all saw this in The Last Dance. It resurfaced. Jordan sobbing with the trophy in his hand with the hat on and just lying on the floor exhausted and sobbing because of the loss of his father. And the minute that fight ended, you saw Khabib in the octagon in Abu Dhabi, and he was lying on the floor, understandably and uncontrollably sobbing. And I'm sitting there watching it, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Not that the emotion was surprising, but it really did move me. And then I'm going, well, Khabib's going to speak. And when Khabib speaks, he says that that's it. It's over. It's done. He's not going to fight anymore. And I could be wrong on this, but if I remember it correctly, I think his mother didn't want him to fight without his father. He said he had to come back and finish the job here 29-0, and he was walking away. And I'll be fully transparent, because a lot of times with the UFC, we have moments where you see someone retire, and you're like, all right, they're coming back. For example, Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor, I think, is retired more times than Antonio Brown. And they have a fight in the works for Conor to come back sometime. I guess it's in the early part of 2021. But when I saw Khabib in that moment on Saturday, I said to him, that's it. You know, I know he's only 32. I know he's one of the all-time greats with my limited knowledge of the UFC. But that is it. Because that's an emotional decision where he's thinking about his dad and he didn't want to go on and continue to fight without his dad being there. And I had two friends I was watching the fight with, three friends. And three of those friends are hardcore UFC fans, like P1 UFC fans. And I said to them at the time, once we discussed the entire fight and the emotions, do you think this is actually it? And people said, the three people I were talking to, my three friends, yeah, this is it. And I said, well, he's 32. Like, in 3-4 years, would he make a return? Or in 2 years, would he make a return? And they were like, no, I don't think so. After seeing that, and then I kind of said, yeah, I agree with you. So we go into this interview with Dana White that we were taping before the show. And I wasn't expecting to lead with this, but this is where we're going to lead with it. And we'll air you the entire interview with Dana White, about a 15-minute conversation where we've talked about lobster, steak, rigatoni a la vodka, Khabib, Gaethje, McGregor, Ferguson. Now, we talked about it all with Dana White. And in that conversation, Dana White revealed this to me. And I'm just saying, like, how surprised were you in the moment? You know, very surprised. I didn't see it coming. And then he said, Zach, I'm going to tell you something I haven't told anybody. And I'm paraphrasing here, but this was the gist. And the gist of the conversation was that Dana White's been talking to Khabib. And not only have they been talking, he expects Khabib to return and go for 30-0. How about that? So you go from he's retiring on Saturday to now when we sit here on a Thursday and nothing's official. You'll have to hear the whole conversation at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific. Nothing is totally official, but Dana White has the feel through his conversations with Khabib that Khabib is not going to retire and stay true to that retirement, and he's going to go for 30-0 because that's what his dad wanted him to do. So when I talk about in the open, when you lose someone, you go through many stages of grieving. You go through many somber moments. And eventually, you have to turn your life around and get back into a state of happiness where you go on and you honor the person that you were so close with and that you love, and you continue to do what you love. And if Khabib never fights again, you won't hear a peep from me. You won't hear me complain for 1 second. But if he comes back, it will continue to be a great story where someone like myself, who's not the biggest UFC fan in the world, will continue to watch and root for someone like Khabib. So Dana White, you'll hear the interview later. He told the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio that he and Khabib have been talking, and he expects Khabib to return and go for 30-0. Nice little piece of breaking news from Dana White, and we appreciate him coming on as always. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break here. When we come on back, we laid out the timeline yesterday from the whole Justin Turner situation with the MLB. Something seems fishy to me about it. I'll tell you what's fishy about it when we return in 5 minutes.
He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It will keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. All right, I got to get back into this Justin Turner story, because following the World Series, I would say in the immediate aftermath and even after having a full day to digest it, sure, we could talk about the decision of the Rays front office and also Kevin Cash to pull Blake Snell. It was a dumb decision, no doubt about it. You have to have a little feel for the situation. Stop with all these analytics and number crunching geeks and all that, where it's live and die by the analytics. Stop. Use the information, digest the information, but don't live and die with the information. And that's what the Rays did on Tuesday night in the World Series. And it cost them forcing a Game 7, which would have been last night. So that's one take from the World Series. And also going to Anderson, they made two dumb decisions. Pulling Snell was incredibly dumb. And then they even made probably a worse decision by putting in Anderson, who allowed seven earned runs in his last six outings. But Kevin Cash tells me after the game, he's been the best relief pitcher in baseball the last 2 years. Stop it. Stop it, stop it, stop it, Kevin Cash. If you want to pull Snell, that's one thing. Dumb. Yeah, you're probably being used as a puppet anyway by the geeks in the front office. But then to put in Anderson, huh? Come again? Doesn't make sense. So that's one take from the aftermath of the World Series with the Rays. Then it's the take of, let's celebrate the Dodgers' first championship since 1988. What an accomplishment. Unbelievable. Mookie Betts getting his second ring. One with Boston now. One with the Dodgers. He hit the insurance home run to put him up by 3-1. You also have the feel-good story of Clayton Kershaw, and seeing Clayton Kershaw, who's been abused and abused and abused for years in the postseason, stepping up, delivering in the World Series, and you see the emotion that he displayed. And he becomes finally a World Series champion, where his career is nowhere close to being over, but he has accomplished everything really there is to accomplish in a career. When you look at Clayton Kershaw, he's 32 years old. He's an 8-time All-Star, now a World Series champion, Triple Crown winner, multiple Cy Young Award winner, NL MVP, led the league in wins multiple times, led the league in ERA multiple times, strikeout leader 3 times, pitched a no-hitter. Like, what else is there to do for Clayton Kershaw? The only thing that was left was to show up in the postseason and get a big, fat, shiny ring on his finger. Whenever they have the celebration, whenever they hand out the rings at the ring ceremony, he will now be entitled to that because he's a World Series champion. So those are the two takes when you talk about really the things on the field. Now, the biggest take and the preeminent storyline, storyline numero uno following the World Series is what the heck happened with Justin Turner. So Justin Turner, according to the way that we understand this from Jeff Passan, the MLB got an inconclusive test that came back in the second inning. That test was from the swab that was sent to the site in Utah. So taken in Texas, where the World Series was, in Arlington, then went to the lab in Utah. That test, to my knowledge, was taken on Monday. Somehow, they didn't get that test back until the second inning of the World Series, and it was inconclusive. So then the test that I guess he took Tuesday morning was just arriving to the testing center in Utah, and they said, let's expedite that process. So they didn't pull Justin Turner off the field in the second inning, third inning, fourth inning, fifth inning, sixth inning, or seventh inning. Inconclusive test, which, to be fair, it's easy to get on the MLB. Yank him off the field, get him out of there. You have to operate as if that's a positive test. Fair. If you have that take, I'm not going to yell at you. But if you've been in a sport that, what, for 2 months hasn't had a positive test or whatever it was, it's been a long time. And you're in a quote-unquote bubble, even though there's fans, 10, 11,000 fans in the stands at the World Series, you're probably thinking it's a false positive. So MLB gets a call back in the sixth or seventh inning, whenever it was. Ring, ring. Control center in Utah. Yeah, we got a problem. Well, what's the problem? Justin Turner's second test, positive. So I was talking about this yesterday. And mainly we were talking about afterwards, Turner, who was in isolation, breaks the MLB protocol and goes on the field to celebrate it with his teammates. And we were talking about if that was the right or wrong decision and how you could understand him wanting to be out there when he feels fine, but he should not have been out there because we don't know how many people he spread the virus to. And I know some people will tell me, well, he was already on the field during the game with the, you know, even though they didn't know it was positive, he had the virus, so he would have already spread it. So what's the harm of him being on the field? Now, hold on. Doesn't mean he spread it to the entire team. Still doesn't mean he spread it to the entire team. We'll probably never know that because now the World Series is over. But he definitely could have spread it to more people on that Tuesday night when they're celebrating a World Series championship. Could they have put him in the bleachers in isolation? And when they were finishing up, passing around the trophy, then brought it to him? And then really sanitized that trophy after he touched it? Sure, they could have done that. But Turner should not have been on the field, especially with the mask off, celebrating with his teammates. But then yet again, if I win a World Series, and you never know if you'll ever win a World Series again, it's that human emotion. I put in all this work. My teammates, according to what people said, don't have a problem with it. So I'm going to go out there, and if my manager tells me it's fine, if my teammates tell me it's fine, I'm going to continue to celebrate. So there's both sides of it. But that's been like the big conversation afterwards, after the World Series. Now, here's just something that I have a tough time buying. And after giving it a full day to think about it, how did they find out that test from Monday? How'd they get it in the second inning on Tuesday? And that was the inconclusive test. Like, don't they have to get that test on Monday? Back before the game, you would think. I'm wondering here on this timeline that's been reported, because if you remember, there's like a few versions of this story. I've seen a version of the story that both were positive. Then you heard Rosenthal after the game on Fox, and he corrected himself. But immediately after the game on Fox, he said they had one test back Tuesday afternoon. So which one is it? And if we're just going to go with the passing timeline, that the first test came back inconclusive, and that was the test from Monday, but they got it Tuesday in the second inning. And then the test from Tuesday got to the center in Utah. They expedited the process. That came back from positive. You know, I believe that second one, but the first test is the one that I call into question. And I'm wondering, did the MLB, and I don't know this for a fact, I'm just wondering it because in my gut it just doesn't feel right. Did the MLB really find out about that first test in the second inning? Did they? Or did they maybe find out about it at 4, 5, 6 p.m. Eastern and just took a gamble and said, we're in the World Series. We haven't had positive tests. We haven't had a positive test in a while. Maybe we'll roll the dice here. It's an inconclusive test. Whenever that second test comes in, we'll find out what it is. And we could make up this timeline that's convenient for us where it does cover us. Where the first test, hey, guys, we got in the second inning. It was inconclusive. We eventually yanked him out of the game. We found out the second test. Or could it have been that they were just hoping that second test was not going to come on back until after the game? It's just something I'm going to throw out there. Because I have a hard time believing that that first test came back in the second inning. Now, if it truly came back in the second inning, all right. Totally get it. Inconclusive, you could get on the MLB for not taking him off the field right there. But they wanted to see what that next test was. But something seems fishy to me. Where I was always under the operation and the thought that these tests were coming back before the game, that then you got two tests back during the game. One in the second inning and then one later on in the seventh or eighth inning or right before the eighth inning because he got pulled right before the eighth inning. Something seems off here. Connor, how do you interpret this? Because something's not adding up here. And we know the MLB, Manfred, one question after the game, sayonara, I'm out. I'm going to celebrate the offseason. And let's be real, we probably won't find out how much of the virus did spread after the game because what's the benefit? Yeah, there's investigative reporters. Yes, there's reporters that cover the team. But when we look at it, what benefit would it be to really tell people about this and release it? There's no more games for the foreseeable future, and we don't even know when next season's going to start. Are you with me that something doesn't add up here on that first test?
It's tough to really interpret what happened because, like, none of us really know how fast these tests normally would come back. So I don't know if it's standard operating procedure that one of the tests would take a day to get the result back, and then you would get it during another game being played. I'm not sure if that's standard operating procedure. And I'm also not sure if they got inconclusive tests before. And maybe some of the inconclusive tests are because of clerical errors or you just didn't swab correctly. And then they allow these guys to play. And then most of them come back negative after the fact anyway. So without knowing all of how the testing normally operates, it's tough to really say, well, they definitely
did this. Something's
ambiguous
here.
But it's a little bit strange that why did they get the test? You would think all of these tests would come in before the game. Why did they get this test in the beginning of a game that was already being played on a test that was taken the day before?
And I'm not saying that the first test wasn't inconclusive. Like, I believe that first test was inconclusive. I just wonder when they actually found out about it. And if you found out about it at 4 or 5 o'clock, you could then, in the cover-up, once you know what played out, say, oh, we found out about that in the second inning. We waited. We weren't sure what the case was because it was inconclusive. Probably thinking it's a false positive. Let's roll the dice. We'll either find out what that second test, if it's positive, we'll yank him off the field. If we don't find out until after the game, well, then we could kind of fib the story and say that first test, we didn't find out until maybe the sixth or the seventh inning. But to just believe that that first test came back in the second inning, and maybe it did, and I don't have any hard proof here, hardcore evidence, but something tells me in my mind that if we put a little Rob Manfred on a lie detector test, hey, buddy boy, Rob, my good pal, Rob Manfred, did that test really come back in the second inning? Get Jack Bauer in there to interrogate everyone. You better start giving me the truth or I'm going to start cutting off your fingers left and right. Rob, what's the real answer? Oh, it came back in the second inning, you're telling me? Survey says, That would be my gut on that one. John Price going to join us next with some gambling advice. First up, though, with the latest CBS Sports Radio update, we get to the Ackman. Oh,
Zach Gelb Show is on the air across the nation on CBS Sports Radio. Here's Zach Gelb.
Exclusive interview with Dana White coming up at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific. You don't want to miss it on the Zach Gelb Show. Right now, we love talking to this guy each and every Thursday in football season, 6:40 p.m. Eastern. It's time to get our view from Vegas with the man we trust when it comes to wagering on sports. That, of course, is our good pal, John Price, who's on with us each and every week, breaking down all the games. And, folks, this is a good time to turn up your radio just a little bit. I know I'm usually loud, and sometimes you may want to turn it down. But turn this radio all the way up, as Bruce Springsteen would say. And listen carefully, because John has something very special for our listeners this week. You can read all about John in Forbes, Yahoo Finance, and he makes TV and radio appearances all around the world, just like what he's going to do right now with us, because quite frankly, he is right on the money with these college and pro games. SportsInformationTraders.com is his website, and the number to call to be a part of the action this season through him, 866-441-2711. John, we have November right around the corner. I'm getting ready for Halloween this weekend. And that means you have all the data analysis from the first half of the season. I can only imagine what you have for your clients in the second half of the National Football League and college football season.
Well, we absolutely have some big things coming. And notoriously, November is one of the more lucrative months for us during the sports calendar year, in particular during football season. And I just, you know, I want to take a moment and thank the people that have reached out to us. We've been on with you now for about a month, and we've had a lot of people sign up for the different promotions that we're doing. But we also get a lot of inquiries from people who either, number one, have never placed a bet before, number two, they play 10 games a week and they're trying to figure out which ones have the most value. We have people that play occasionally and they're looking to sustain their winning. All sorts of people listening to you, Zach, and everyone has an interest in wagering. Everyone has an interest in making money. But there's a lot of questions that need to be answered, and that's what we're here for. You can call us at 866-441-2711, and this is what we're doing. I'm going to issue you this challenge. You got 30 days with my company, and I'm going to show you how to double your bankroll. So for people that want a better understanding, when you go into the stock market, a stockbroker doesn't tell you how many shares you have to buy. You're the decision maker. You're the one that says, this is my budget for the stock market. Or if you're investing in the real estate market, you know what you need to put in to make it happen. With us, we're an investment that works for everyone. So let me show you, big or small, over the next 30 days, how to double your bankroll. Go to our website, sportsinformationtraders.com. Again, it's sportsinformationtraders.com. When you get to the homepage, click on the button. You'll reach out to one of my analysts. They'll talk to you about the process. And listen, this is an easy way to make money if you want to make money. If you don't, keep watching football on the weekends and clapping and calling it a week. We can show you how to double your bankroll in 30 days. November's going to be big. Go to sportsinformationtraders.com.
866-441-2711. John Price here with us on the Zach Gelb Show, as he does each and every Thursday in football season. John, I thought about you on Sunday night, you know, Monday, when I see this line of the Pittsburgh Ravens game come out. Pittsburgh comes off a victory where they played really well in the first half, not so well in the second half. Baltimore coming off the bye. Pittsburgh undefeated, going into Baltimore to play a 5-1 Ravens team. And I saw the line open up, and I saw that it opened as Baltimore as a 5.5-point favorite. And I'm thinking that's Vegas begging everyone to plus the points with the Steelers, and Vegas thinks that the Ravens are going to win. Now, the line has moved. I saw it at one point, Baltimore 3.5, Baltimore -4, the over-under 46.5. What is Vegas doing with this spread? What are they telling you when they make Baltimore such a heavy favorite in this game?
It shows you what Vegas thinks of Baltimore when they basically are making them a 5.5-point favorite over a team that hasn't lost yet. And you're right, the public money has been all over Pittsburgh. We've seen the line at 3.5. It's now +4 in most books. Look, the Steelers are coming off a big win against the Titans. Their offense has been great. The defense has been an issue. Right now, Devin Bush is still out with an injury, and his backup, Spillane, got injured, making a big tackle in last week's game. So He's going to play, but he's not 100% either. This puts an immense amount of pressure on their defensive line, most prominently their edge rushers, to get to Lamar Jackson before he can beat them. And, oh, by the way, yes, as you said, the Ravens coming off a bye week are very well rested, and they watched the video this week of that game against Tennessee. They saw what the Steelers did right in the first half. They also saw what the Steelers did wrong in the second half. Lamar Jackson and a running quarterback has always given the Steelers fits, but the Steelers defense believes that they have the formula to take him down this week. In terms of wagering, I do think it's going to be a very close football game. Pittsburgh is 4-0 against the spread in the last four games. That means in the month of October, they're 4-0 against the spread. I think that trend continues. I'm taking Pittsburgh plus 4 over Baltimore.
Wow, how about that? All right, John Price here with us. We'll get one more game from you, John. Seahawks, that was some game on Sunday Night Football last week between the Seahawks and the Cardinals. Seahawks suffered their first loss of the season. They're now 5-1. 49ers, I thought their season was in trouble. They bounced back the last 2 weeks. They just destroyed the Patriots this past Sunday in Foxborough. 49ers 4-3, Seahawks 5-1, game in Seattle. I see right now Seahawks a 3-point favorite, over under 54 points. Where's the value on this one, John Price?
You talk about some line movement. This line opened at Seattle minus 6, and when Seattle had that collapse against Arizona, you already saw the that line down to minus 3, as you mentioned. And listen, the Seahawks had a tough loss last week, but I do think it could be a blessing for them. This team really struggled on the defensive side of the ball most of the year, and I think they're going to correct those mistakes. I look for Russell Wilson to test the Niners secondary early on. As for the Niners, Jimmy Garoppolo has finally regained his form from last year, although he's still not 100%. They are coming off those wins against the Rams and Patriots. Two secondaries that will both be tested in this game, and that's going to lead me to my wager analysis. I think the value here is on the over. Right now that total's around 53.5, 54. I think the offenses of both sides are really clicking and the defenses are really struggling. So if I'm looking for value here, I'm going to take the over 53.5 points in the Seahawks-Niners game. And again, folks, as we get ready for November to begin, let me just say this. Every year, November's a lucrative month for my company. It doesn't matter if you bet 100 a game, 500 a game, 1,000 a game, or if you've never done this before. I want you to follow my lead and let us show you in the next 30 days how to double your bankroll. You call us at 866-441-2711 or go to sportsinformationtraders.com. Talk to my analysts. Let them know how you want to start and with how much you want to start. We will manage you these 30 days. We will show you how to double your investment. This day and age, it's not the easiest thing to go out and find something that is going to double your money in a month's time. And guess what? Christmas, the holidays, vacations, all that is coming. So I give you this challenge right now. Go to our website, sportsinformationtraders.com. Make November either the first bet you made all the way through those 30 days or continue with us the right way. Go to sportsinformationtraders.com. And let us double your bankroll in 30 days. Be a believer through experience, not just hearing me every week.
Once again, 866-441-2711. That is John Price of sportsinformationtraders.com. John, always enjoy our conversations. I think this was our best one yet. They keep on getting better and better. Keep up the great work. You're doing an A-plus job with us each and every week.
Thank you, and we appreciate your listeners for reaching out to us. We know you're there, and we will help you. Go to sportsinformationtraders.com.
There's John Price, and I do appreciate the audience hearing John Price and trusting John Price. This has been a fun little partnership that we embarked on this journey. I think this is the ninth week now that we've had John Price on, and getting that insight is very compelling. Now, Connor, are you a big gambling guy? Like, I'm a guy that will... I'll put some money on games in football season. You know, I'm not talking big bets. Like, usually I'm betting 10, 15 bucks here and there, pick a few games each and every week. And it's something that I enjoy to do on a football Sunday, football Monday night, you know, maybe even a Thursday night. Watch these games and put a little extra flavor on it. Are you a big gambler, Connor Green?
I follow all the lines, so I know who's the favorites, the big underdogs. I know the Jets are 19.5-point underdogs this weekend, but I don't actually bet on any of the games myself.
Okay.
Somewhat because I don't have a ton of money to be throwing around in these games
That's fair.
I lose. And also, I'm more of a fantasy football guy and like a pick'em pool kind of guy, so I'm not a big throw money on spreads kind of guy.
What I really care about are the picks that we do on Friday with Gus Frerotte. You know, even if I put a $10, $15 down, and sometimes those games, they overlap, but I care about those picks with Gus Frerotte because that's pride on the line. And myself and Gus, after last week, we're even. Just saying. Making a little comeback. We're even now, and we got to carry that momentum. But I always enjoyed just the gambling conversation because I love how people literally live and die by the spread in, ooh, that spread looks a little misleading, so that means this team's going to win or that team's going to lose. And I had one of those moments where usually I'm making fun of people that do that and making fun of my one friend, Greg. Hey, Dave texts me nonstop. Look at this spread. This spread tells you this team's going to win. This team's going to lose. Come on, Zach. What aren't you seeing? How do you pick that team? And I go, well, clearly you're listening to the show because you know all my picks. And most of the times I'm more wrong than right, if we're being fair. But my buddy Greg, right away, the minute that spread comes out, Steelers-Ravens, boom, text message, ding, about the Ravens-Steelers spread. And that was the time where I go, okay, let me analyze that spread a little bit. Yeah, Vegas really thinks the Ravens are going to win, and they think the Ravens are going to win by at least 5 points, 6 points, 7 points, if not more. Because let's just look at the conversation nationally about the Ravens. When we look at the Ravens, they have one loss. And the Ravens going into the year, everyone's saying Super Bowl contender, second best team in the AFC behind the Kansas City. How about those Chiefs? So I was seeing all this hype before the year about the Ravens. Then Ravens get smacked by the Kansas City Chiefs. Get in the mouth and everyone's like, oh, got to jump off the bandwagon. Ravens aren't that great as we thought. Steelers, though, they've had some close games. Coming off a big victory up against Tennessee, they're 6-0. And I guess I get the game is in Baltimore. I don't know how much that is a home field advantage this year, but you would have expected the Steelers to maybe be a 2-point dog, 3-point dog, something like that. Instead, they opened up as a 5.5-point underdog. So I was kind of like a lot of people, yeah, how can't you take the points with the Steelers? And then John Price said what he said, and he still picked the Steelers. That's a line. Does Vegas know what they're doing, or is the public going to win? We'll have to find out.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.